Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library Card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org.
Okay, suppose you're the left brain type, the kind of person who sneers at all those mushy New Age folks. But you have a nagging feeling you're missing out on the really big stuff. What you want is scientific proof for God or some moment of transcendence. Well, believe it or not, there are scientists trying to pinpoint the exact spot in the brain that gives us mystical experiences. Science writer John Horgan went to see them, and he's written a book called Rational Mysticism. One of the first people Horgan visited was a University of Pennsylvania radiologist. Andrew Newberg asks Buddhists to meditate and nuns to pray while they're hooked up to PET scanning machines.
When these people go into a kind of trance-like mystical state, there's a part of the brain that normally helps us recognize where our bodies end and where the rest of the world begins. And he says that activity in this region is greatly suppressed, and that might be why people have this experience of great unity with all things in a mystical experience. The problem is that other researchers who've studied meditators haven't necessarily found the same thing.
Well, the thing that's fascinating about the study you've done is that you've gone and talked to a lot of different people about the different ways in which they're approaching this. To stick with Andrew Newberg for a moment, how does he physically set up the PET scan variation that he's doing in order to study the connection between meditation and brain activity?
Well, this is sort of interesting. He set up a kind of meditation room where these people go and sit. And actually, they've got a string tied to their fingers that goes to Newberg. And when they feel themselves entering a state of contemplative bliss, they tug on the string, and this radioactive tracer at that moment is injected into them. Then they're rushed into the brain scanning room, and what they get is a snapshot of the brain at the moment when they actually pulled on the string.
Yeah, of course, the skeptic looking at that will say, didn't they have to be not in a meditative state in order to be able to pull the string?
Exactly. That's one of the problems with this type of research. I mean, there are alternative methods. You could use, for example, a magnetic resonance imaging machine, which is a very popular brain scanning method nowadays. But the problem there is that these things are really noisy. And so obviously, with that kind of technology, you're not going to be in a very peaceful, contemplative state.
Well, given the restrictions on the research, is the result consistent?
Well, this is the problem. I mean, as I went around to different researchers, everyone had a different theory about what goes on in the brain in mystical or religious states in general. And for example, I went up to Canada to interview a guy named Michael Persinger, a psychologist at Laurentian University, and he had an entirely different theory from Newberg about how the brain induces these particular states. And he thinks that a lot of these might be related to the temporal lobe, which has also been implicated in epilepsy. And what Persinger thinks is that some people are actually experience a kind of low-grade seizure in the brain that creates some of these fantastical experiences. But what's really interesting about his approach is that he's created a machine for artificially inducing these experiences. So Newberg is just sort of watching the meditators and waiting for them to report having an experience. Persinger has created a machine that delivers electromagnetic pulses to the brain to induce the experiences artificially.
Well, you could also say that what he's doing is inducing seizures, though, right?
Well, that's what he says. But there have been some really wild reports about what's going on in Persinger's lab. This machine that he uses is called the God Machine. And so when I first heard about this thing, of course, I was very eager to go and meet Persinger and try out the God machine for myself.
Yeah. Well, all right, you went to Canada where he has his God machine, and it's pretty clear why it's called that. And you did actually have it hooked up, didn't you?
That's right. It's sort of a little hat with these solenoids attached to it that are hooked up to a computer. And with this rig, Persinger can deliver pulses of electromagnetic radiation to your brain in very specific ways. And he's got this little chamber where you go and sit in this big old ratty armchair, and he blindfolds you, and then you're hooked up to these sensors that go to an EEG machine, which is watching your brain waves. And so I went through this whole thing, and I was really hoping to see God there. But nothing really dramatic happened. I mean, I sort of went into a reverie. I started thinking about some things in my past. I saw some sort of low-grade hallucinations, but of the kind that you would see anyway if you close your eyes and sit quietly for a half an hour or so. So nothing very dramatic happened. And I think that it's probably a case of suggestion. If you're somebody who is inclined to these sorts of visions anyway, and you go into this machine and you really believe it's going to have an effect on you, then you might see something fairly dramatic. But if you're a skeptic like I am, then probably not much is going to happen.
One of the researchers you talked to, whom I found most appealing, and I guess that says something about me as well as him, was James Austin, who is a Buddhist and neurologist. He's written a book called Zen in the Brain. Can you tell me about him?
Yeah, I'm glad you liked Austin, because he was one of the people who most impressed me in the course of doing this book. He was a Harvard-educated neurologist who then went to work at the University of Colorado. And I think he must have been about 45 when he took a sabbatical in Japan, and he got interested in Zen Buddhism and took it up and became a devoted practitioner. And a few years ago, he produced this monumental book, Zen in the Brain, 800 pages long, in which he attempts to find correlations between his perspective on the world as a Zen Buddhist and his perspective as a neurologist. I mean, basically, his idea is that somehow mystical practices, mystical experiences and meditation and or prayer, they kind of etch away the brain in a physical sense, and that's manifested in a reduction in anxiety and selfishness.
Literally etch away. I mean, there are physical changes in the brain.
That's right. He thinks that a mystical experience releases what he calls excitotoxins. These are neurochemicals that actually dissolve brain connections. And he thinks that this effect has made him a calmer, more caring person.
One thing we've only skirted, I guess, not really touched on, is what psychedelics might tell us about spiritual experience. Is there anyone studying that?
Actually, this is, I think, one of the most newsworthy parts of my book. I discovered that there is really a renaissance in research on psychedelics. It seems that the sorts of experiences that you get in contemplative practices such as meditation or prayer or even Sufi dancing or fasting are very similar to the experiences that are induced by LSD, psilocybin, mescaline, and some of these other things. I guess what some people worry about is that the psychedelic experiences can be so extreme and dramatic that they can really get out of control. And then the negative effects cancel out any positive spiritual effects that you might get from them. But the hope is that some of these substances can be incorporated into a spirituality. I mean, this is already done in this country in the Native American church, where Indians take peyote in ceremonies, and that's a vital part of their spirituality. But they do it in a very careful way, in a very controlled, ritualistic setting.
John Horgan is the author of the book Rational Mysticism: Dispatches from the Border Between Science and Spirituality.